the Reality and Brutally Honest Truth About Special Needs Planning podcast. My name is Patrick Barbieri, Executive Director of Lab Collaborative. All right, let me give you a few announcements. First of all, I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. The Lab Transition Fair will be on Thursday, April 16th, 2020. It'll be held in Lexington at the Scottish Rite Masonic Museum. This is where we have the lab graduation every year, which is at 33 Merritt Road. It'll start at 6:30 and go to 8:30. Please come. It doesn't matter how old your son or daughter is. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to learn the system. You know, even the most savvy people out there going to these workshops, they'll tell you that you just need to go over and over again just before things sink in. So again, we cover so many topics from housing to guardianship. Adult agencies will be there. We'll be talking about recreation. We'll have alumni parents there talking about their experiences. This is just a wonderful opportunity to be able to connect and learn and be prepared for the future. Okay, so in this episode, this is episode 19, we talk with Camille Grimes, who is the AFC Adult Family Care Manager from Opportunities for Inclusion. And this is really, again, this is something that was talked at our transition conference for the last couple of years. It's really an underutilized service. And Camille really just gives you the nuts and bolts of how to access this service, what kind of funds you can get for the service. But it's really about, it's a mass health program where you can apply to and get monies to be able to have a caretaker work with your son or daughter at home, working on ADL skills such as bathing, dressing, eating, and things like that. Again, there's some criteria on the, I think I mentioned in the episode, there is a person that you can call if you're interested in getting some of these services. And the podcast will explain how that works. I just want to mention, too, there's two programs, AFC, which is for students that are 16 years and older, and for students under 16, it's another program called PCA, Personal Care Assistance Program. This podcast will not cover that, but we'll do another podcast that covers that, the essentials of that program. But it's pretty much the same. And we will give you all the resources to contact the people to inquire about it. All right, I really hope you enjoy this episode. Again, a really underutilized resource that you really should look into. Thank you. All right, Camille, how you doing?
I'm well, Patrick. How are you?
Day after Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween.
So, it was a good night, and it was certainly a good one for the kids last night. It was warm, and you know, the leaves were blowing, and it's kind of spooky out there. You know, that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it turned out to be a nice night. Absolutely.
Good. All right. So, we're going to talk about adult family care, and you know, we've talked you know, one of the more underutilized services that parents can use, and we'll talk about the criteria and everything like that. And you know, really, the purpose of this podcast is sharing with parents some of those unknowns that are out there, and because it is overwhelming, and
Absolutely.
There's a lot of information, and maybe parents have heard of AFC before. It used to be called adult foster care, right?
It's interchangeable.
Okay.
So depending where, I guess, you get the services, so adult foster care or adult family care.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So I think parents may hear it, and it's like, oh, that sounds nice, but maybe it's too complicated to get, or it doesn't apply to me. So our objective is to kind of break down all this criteria and kind of go through that. And just to talk a little bit about yourself, thank you for the connection. You know, the more connections we have, the better. And you are the AFC Care Manager
at
Opportunities
correct.
For Inclusion.
Yes.
And your office is located?
We're off of Moody Street in Waltham.
Okay, good, good. So again, being in the Middlesex area, it's just any time that we can build these relationships. Even though we have students from 70 districts, they can access it where it would be more appropriate for them. But so thank you for being a resource for us. I want to say it now. Camille and maybe a colleague will be coming out to our parent night on May 28th to talk more about AFC specifically. So, you know, anybody out there that would like to come and hear them talk about adult family care, you are certainly welcome to do that. So that's what these meetings are for. But this would be a nice prerequisite for parents that are asking about it. And Camille, I was just saying to you before we started the podcast, I go to a lot of parent meetings. We had a parent meeting the other night during our dance, and we had a transition meeting, and both times AFC came up.
Wow.
So I felt like an expert.
Good. Well, that's great.
But I was able to give much more specific information.
Wonderful.
And that was by talking to you, and I was just amazed at how simple it was to be able to communicate that to parents. So,
I'm glad to hear that.
So let's start from the beginning and kind of go through. But if you want to give just a little bit of information of what are the services that a family can receive from AFC, if you want to start there.
Sure.
That'd be great.
So I'd like to start to let everybody know that AFC, it is MassHealth or Medicaid funded. So the individual would have to be on either MassHealth Standard or MassHealth Common Health. Mm-hmm. It's free for individuals who are 16 years of age and older, mm-hmm. typically 18, because that's when kids can apply for SSI, and then
right.
once SSI mm-hmm. comes in, that's MassHealth generally kicks in. So we are able to provide support for caregivers who are caring for their loved one.
Mm-hmm.
In this setting, it's oftentimes a parent caring for their child with either a mental or a developmental disability. Mm-hmm. But it is also for, let's say, a grown child caring for their elderly parent.
Mm-hmm.
So we cover a broad range of individuals who we serve. And
yep.
Our focus is just to provide care and ongoing support, training, advocacy, and such to our caregivers.
All right, great. So you said most times that the services would start when a student was 18 years old.
Typically, yes.
Typically. This is just a general question as far as the mean age that you see parents accessing that now. Is it 18? Is it 25? Is it...
So, as you mentioned, this program isn't always well known of.
Mm-hmm.
So we do go out to transition fairs, and we try to promote mm-hmm. Our service as much as possible,
mm-hmm.
just so that parents can start receiving that these services when their child turns 18.
Yeah.
It's hard to say exactly mm-hmm. because we serve a broad range of ages.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just, you know, sometimes when would a parent... Would it be post 22 that somebody tells them about these services, or is it during? And what our hope is that they at least get this information, even them prior to being 16, would they be eligible? Just because if they remember it, like this is something that came to my attention.
Sure. Yep.
Maybe I need those skills now for my son or daughter. So
yes, right.
So just again, you have some great information that you gave me as far as like the criteria and stuff, which I'll post up on our when I post the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But can you just talk about those ADL skills specifically, what they are?
Yes. So the individual in mind, they must have either queuing and supervision
mm-hmm.
or physical assistance for one activity of daily living.
Yeah.
So that could be dressing, bathing, transferring, ambulating, toileting, or eating.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they need queuing and supervision, so let's say you have to instruct your child to bathe, you know, to make sure that they're completing that task appropriately, or if you have to actually physically assist them, that could be you know, the minimum of what they could be eligible for.
Okay. I think I asked you before, I have a sister that I'm a guardianship, I'm co-guardian with my brother. She lives in a group home, and I think you had mentioned to me that a student would not be eligible if they live in a group home. It would just be if they're living at home.
Correct. But, yeah. So the caregiver and the individual, they do have to live together in the same residence.
Okay.
And what, since you mentioned guardianship, I would like to address, at the moment, at this moment, the state does not recognize a spouse or legal guardian to be a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, however, because of that, oftentimes one parent will relinquish their guardianship to be the caretaker, while the other parent remains the legal guardian, has that role and responsibility.
And that's an important thing to record. I just got done with a lab parent group, alumni group, and I asked them how many of the parents had accessed AFC. I was surprised that many of them did.
Oh, wonderful.
Then another person said, "What's that?"
Oh, sure, that does happen.
But the main conversation piece was around how they worked out the guardian, because I think
yes.
You had a mom and dad, and they both want to be the guardian, but one was going to be the caregiver, and they had, so it surprised me on how they decided on who was going to be the caregiver, who was the different roles, but so we ended up talking about that. And somebody in the group also had the sibling was the caregiver.
Absolutely.
And that's something that can be done
as
well.
So it can be a family member, a non-family member, like I mentioned, not a spouse or the legal guardian, but anyone who's living in that home can help support this individual. They could absolutely be a caregiver.
Right. Non-family member?
Non-family member, yep.
Awesome. Okay, good. Just want to make sure I get everything in there, because I know the questions that come, so... okay, so we talked about what adult family care was. We talked about what services the student can receive from adult family care. Then we talked about the guardianship. These are like main points for the audience here. I just want to kind of repeat these because it's important that we do that. So the caregiver cannot be the guardian. Let's talk about the monies that they receive and how that kind of comes into play.
Absolutely. So, of course, we want to be able to support our caregivers, and one piece is the financial aspect of having to care for somebody while they're living at home. So we are able to pay our caregivers anywhere from $9,000 to $18,000 a year annually, and that just depends on the level of care that is being required.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tax-free.
Yep.
All that we ask is that you report it to any state agencies, but other than that, it is a tax-free stipend.
And that's a good amount of money. I mean, that's
something
absolutely. That could go a long way.
Yes, especially for families who are already providing that kind of care in their home.
Exactly.
It's a big piece. It's definitely helpful.
So if there's a range between $9,000 and $18,000, who decides what amount that's going to be, and how would they get that information?
That's a great question. So one of our registered nurses will go out to the home and do an assessment of the member.
Okay.
And dependent on the nurse's assessment, that determines their level of requirement. So there's a level one that receives less care and a level two that requires more care.
I see. Okay. And this could be something in between. It's not like 9 or 18. It's something that could be 12.
Maybe I misspoke. It's more 9 or 18,000.
Oh, I see. Okay, okay.
I apologize.
All right. That's good to know. As far as, this is something that for parents, I think we do a lot of paperwork in the special ed field. We got the IEPs, we got progress reports, then the post-22 world, they even have more paperwork, MassHealth, SSI,
absolutely.
A payee, and again, that's just the realities of what we, you know, need to do. As far as, you know, documenting these services, so say it goes on for 6 months and the caregiver is, you know, got the direction from the nurse and they have all this in place, what do they have to provide as far as documentation goes, and you know, they're getting the money,
mm-hmm.
what do they have to provide as proof for anything that they're doing as far as being the caregiver?
So we do have a form called our caregiver log, And the caregiver log acts as the caregiver's timesheet. Mm-hmm. So we ask that our caregivers complete it on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. They document the level of assistance that they require for their child. And the nurse goes over all this information. It's line by line, just documenting what they are doing throughout the day and during the day.
Okay, so they provide it for them. It's not complicated.
No, not at all.
You have this, before I forget, this caregiver log, which I think is great. And again, I'll post this as well. In lab, we do a lot of ADL skills.
Sure.
I mean, we're trying to help students be as independent as possible. And it's nice when you, when you, we look at these, and what it really is just specific things that the caregiver could be doing with the client, and this is kind of a checkoff list. And and I looked at these skills, and these are very much of the ones that we're using, depending on the level of the student.
Sure, of course.
You know, right to position in a better chair, up to, you know, phone use.
Right.
So it's really a wide level, a range of students that, that we'll be working with. So this is good. This is nice. I'm going to show this to some of our staff because it's nice to have a. It's kind of like a rubric, but it's also a checkoff list for that as well.
Yeah, and like I said, it primarily acts as their timesheet, so
right.
we'll pick it up once a month, and yeah, it's great.
So just back to the registered nurse
yes.
and the care manager. So let's say we have a caregiver who's willing and able, but they just don't have experience in doing this type of work. Is there training that goes along with this, or how? What's the input from the RN?
Yeah, absolutely. So the RN provides healthcare oversight, any training that that may be needed, and it's all person centered. You know, each individual is going to require different healthcare oversight or needs. So our registered nurse is always available. I shouldn't say always, within business hours, to provide any oversight or training. The caregivers can always give us a call. You know, if they have any questions or if there's a better way to do an activity of daily living or a suggestion. So the RN is absolutely, they're very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Accessible.
Thank you, yes.
Okay, good. So as far as the process, if I, you know, I had a son or a daughter that was gonna get these services and I wanted to apply today, let's say, how does that look? I mean, I would call, is there an interview process? How's that go?
That's a great question. So there is a little screening process. So if someone is interested in the services, they call into the office. We have a little screening tool that we use just to see if it sounds like the individual is eligible over the phone. And then if it appears that they are eligible, that's when we set up a date for the nurse to go out to do the assessment.
Okay.
And then it's just a moving forward process from there.
Okay. And how long does that usually take? Is it fairly quick or is it?
It is dependent, but it generally it's fairly quick as long as, you know, scheduling, if we can schedule with the parents and get in, and it's fairly quick. We do have to submit our assessment through MassHealth, and MassHealth then has to approve it.
Yeah.
And that's the only piece that takes the longest, I would say. But other than that, it's a fairly quick process as long as they have MassHealth and everyone's eligible.
Right. Because I can imagine in some circumstances, again, we family members want to do as much as possible until they can't.
Absolutely.
Or it gets too frustrating. And obviously at that point, they should probably have done it a year ago, 2 years ago. But then once they find out about this, you know, they want to put it in place immediately. And so I think part of our job would be, you know, saying to parents, you start to think about those things now.
Sure.
And plan it all around, you know, there'll be things that we're doing in school. How can they complement what's doing it going on at home with the caregiver? Because I think that's the key, because we're during the school hours, and that's when we can do things. But
right.
if we can work with a caregiver and just supplementing those skills, it's so much better for the student's independence.
Absolutely. So. And that's what we work towards is, you know, independence of the individual if possible. And if not, you know, there's that continued help from the caregiver and such.
Great. Let's just talk about the caregiver. So we said that it can be, obviously, if it's can be a parent as long as they're not the guardian. It can be a sibling as long as they're 16 years of age, right?
18 years of age.
18, sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
What about, are there, like say the parents want somebody else to do it, they don't want to do it themselves. Are there, can they find, are there people out there that want to be caregivers? Is there like a pool of people that you work with that do this? Or you're just saying that the family's obviously responsible for doing this piece of it? Because I know in school sometimes we try to find help for parents. If we can find somebody, you know, it's hard to to do that. But we'll certainly put out information and say if somebody would like to do these hours with the parents. So it can really be anybody as long as the parents get them involved. So because we said it could be a non-family member
correct.
As well.
So unfortunately at this time we do not provide matching.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
However, if a parent were to have somebody in the home that they trust that could provide the necessary care to the individual, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah. I mean, I would think it would be a parent or especially while they're in school.
Sure.
But I think I'm just looking at, you know, as they start to get older mm-hmm. and they can't do it or the child is too big to do those
sure.
kind of things. So maybe they're looking at outside providers.
And I know a very similar service to what you're speaking of, PCA, personal care attendants.
Right.
I would like to just mention that if you are eligible and receiving AFC services, that PCA, it's a duplicative service, so you're not eligible to receive both.
I see. And PCA is prior to 16? Is that the age?
Unfortunately, I don't know much more about that.
Yeah. So you can either only get one or the other?
Correct.
Okay, that's good to know. Which makes sense, because, you know, as they become of age, then they transfer to another service. So they have to be 18. They can get support from the register. That's all good. Because, again, for caregivers, sometimes people will say, can I do it? Am I capable of doing it? And
sure.
you can, and you'll get oversight from... and that's pretty straightforward. As far as the participants' requirements, I just want to go over this again. Camille, just so they got to be 16 years old, must unable to live alone because of medical, physical, or mental health condition.
Mm-hmm.
So the nurse determines that, right? How is that determined?
So
from
yes.
the assessment?
Yes.
Okay.
So it is determined through the assessment, but we also work with the primary care physician.
Okay.
And
good.
So
okay.
we correspond and we work with their clinical team.
Okay. Then this is probably the most complicated piece of it because I think many parents will say, I want to do this, but am I eligible for MassHealth? So how do they know that?
So generally, as I touch base just a little bit, once a child turns 18, they apply for SSI.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as they're eligible for SSI, generally MassHealth will kick in shortly after.
So do they have to be getting SSI? To get the service, does one... So, for instance, I might be saying this wrong, but I'm trying to put it together. So, MassHealth is tied to SSI. I only know that because my sister's payments from SSI, if she doesn't do the MassHealth paperwork, then she doesn't get the SSI.
Right.
So...
But I don't think it has to... As long as you're receiving MassHealth... not everyone might be eligible for SSI,
okay.
but I could be wrong. I'm not exactly sure on that process. So
okay.
I do apologize.
No, it's okay. And this is just going through this. And like I said, this stuff is always complicated. And I think the services are great. And we sometimes get into it. It's funny because I'm going through the criteria. I'm like, oh, that's good. This is easy. This is easy. Okay, the MassHealth piece.
Sure.
It just gets a little bit complicated.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Yeah, which it does, and unfortunately, I don't know much more about that side of the piece. But
not a problem. They also have to get a CORI.
Yes, we CORI annually.
Good, good. Do you have to do fingerprints? Is
that don't do fingerprints.
Okay.
So the agency fingerprints staff, but we don't fingerprint our caregivers
staff.
Right
okay.
now.
Okay, good. That's something we have to do in the schools as well. All right, let me, I'm just going through some of your information that you gave me here, Camille, which is awesome. And it's also, it's refreshing because, you know, sometimes you dig through paperwork and the fine print there's not a lot of fine print in here. It just kind of gives you what the facts are about this. It makes it real simple to understand, which, again, as I said, it's very refreshing to see these kind of things. So for parents out there, we're kind of going through all these criteria things, and anything that we don't cover, and it really isn't, there isn't any much more to it.
Right, it's pretty straightforward. You know, as long as everyone is eligible, it's a wonderful program. So we really just hope that more people can utilize it and take advantage of it.
I think you mentioned this to me before, Camille. Let's just say a parent had a question about this. They look at your paperwork. They can call on the sheet, which I'll send, is an RN that
yes.
they can call?
Yes.
Okay. And she could answer any questions just about how to get started.
Absolutely. So I believe the contact information you have is for the director. Her name is Barbara Dunker.
Yep, that's it.
She would be more than happy to answer any questions, as would I, but that's the information that is displayed right there.
Okay.
But she more than happy. You know, if any parents have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out.
All right, good, good. Because that sometimes takes the fear out of it, if I can just pick up the phone and make a phone call.
Yes.
So it's okay to put her information up on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I don't want to get all these calls, and she said, "Where's all these lab people?"
She's aware.
So we have families from 70 districts. They wouldn't necessarily be. Not everybody would be able to go through you, or would they have to go through their local ARC, or does it depend?
So that's a great question. We do serve most of Middlesex and parts of Norfolk County.
Okay.
And we do make case-by-case basis, so if you know you're interested in, let's say, for instance, that you are too far out of the jurisdiction, we'll either make exceptions, or we could refer you to a different agency that might be more appropriate in terms of location.
Awesome. That's great to know. All right. Camille, I think we covered it all. I mean, I appreciate you going through this with me, because I think, again, we'll do the family, the parent night that we have. It's in conjunction with our dances, so you're going to see kids
wonderful.
Dancing like crazy.
We'll love that.
But, you know, May 28th is a little bit off. So, again, anybody that is interested in learning more about this, please, you know, click on the links for the fact sheets that are on there. It'll also include Barbara's information. Camille, I'll put your own information too here. Have your card.
Wonderful.
And again, this podcast was just to kind of say, listen, this is a great resource that you can access, and we just want to make sure that you're able to, if you need it, either now or later.
Yes.
This is a very simple process to go forward. So, did I miss anything, Camille? Anything?
We've touched everything. And like I mentioned, if anyone has any questions, please honestly reach out to us. We'd be more than happy to speak with you.
Well, Camille, thanks for coming out.
Thank you, Patrick.
As always, enjoy the rest of the day.
You too. Thanks.